Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Not enough.
No, it didn't. I don't know that it did anything different than Advil. I honestly don't. Yeah. I don't know. I have had, as Michael can attest, I've spent the last 4 days sleeping on top of the covers in my clothes. Can't get under, because I can't get under the, it hurts, my back hurts too much, yeah. And I can't take off my clothes.
The worst is we went over to your house on Friday for dinner, and my wonderful wife recommended that I take you upstairs change you.
And no, come on, that's Ingleside.
Preview
of
things to come.
This is General George Washington, and you're listening
go full
to the Tony Kornheiser.
All righty, then. We're live at Chatter at the corner of Wisconsin Avenue Northwest, Jennifer Street Northwest. It's cold, but it's not going to snow or rain today. Tomorrow it's going to rain again because it always rains in the middle of the week and at the end of the week. It always does that. We have 15% off for most foods here other than happy hour. In our attempt to help with the furlough, we're not going to give away free food like Jose Andres because we're not up for the Nobel Peace Prize.
Oh right, no,
like
this year. Is.
We're not up for that. We have trivia tonight at Chatter. It will be warmer tonight than it is today. The bottle of water that I always keep in my car froze solid, and I just thought, yeah, sure, because it's 10 degrees that's, outside. That's what's going to happen. David Aldridge is here. Michael Kornheiser is here. Nigel will run the board, do the news. Produce the show. Liz Clark will join us in a little while. She is delayed because one of her assignments from the Washington Post was to monitor and then write about the Francis Tiafoe-Rafael Nadal match, which started at 4:15 Eastern time in the United States. I was up, of course, and didn't last long.
No.
It was three sets, and it was pretty quick, and Nadal blew him off the court. So she'll get here when she gets here. Let us start. Let me thank Will in Nashville. Dear Grandpa, Tony, please use this headlamp on your walks with Chessie. I know your back is still sore, but at least you don't have a hurt bum like some other Washingtonian with superior athletic genes, Dwight Howard. And from Andrew Stoller, who's the buyer and the manager, he says, please accept these yak tracks and a headlamp from Ski House in Steamboat Springs, Colorado. Ooh. Steamboat Springs, Colorado, isn't that where Jimmy Huga, the great American skier, was from, Steamboat Springs? Look up Jimmy Huga, H-E-U-G-A. I think he was from Steamboat Springs. They should greatly decrease the chance of you falling during your early morning dog walk. My 75-year-old father, who lives in the mountains of Colorado, uses these same products. Right. Now he only falls when he forgets to put them on. He forgot twice last winter, suffered a broken wrist and a concussion.
Ooh.
In exchange for this gift, we ask you to name Ski House. That's S-K-I-H-A-U-S, and I think that's a chain store. The official ski shop of the Tony Kornheiser Show, if that distinction has already been claimed, we'd accept the official ski shop west of the Mississippi. It has not been claimed, and you've got it.
There you go.
You've got it. Yes. Jimmy Huga, Steamboat Springs?
Born in San Francisco, passed away in Boulder, Colorado.
Somebody is from Steamboat Springs. Some one of the great, maybe it's
not the
Billy
Mayors.
Kid, Jimmy Kidd, Billy Kidd, whoever he was.
No?
The Mayors, maybe it's the Mayors. Phil and Don, Everly Brothers and the Mayors. I don't know. So anyway, we'll find out who is from Steamboat Springs because I know somebody is. But we're going to first talk about Klay Thompson. Klay Thompson is the guy on the Golden State Warriors who gets lost.
Billy Kidd.
Okay,
yes,
so I knew it was somebody.
Yes.
Klay Thompson is the guy who gets lost.
Mm-hmm.
He's not the all-around player or great shooter or...
Well, he's the all-around player. He's not the shooter.
He's not the shooter that Steph Curry is.
He's a better defender than Steph.
Yeah, Steph Curry. Yeah, that's probably true.
Yes.
But he doesn't drive to the basket, so his highlights are always pulling up and shooting.
Mm-hmm.
He's not Draymond Green, who's mouthy and very important and plays all five positions. And he's not Kevin Durant, who's Kevin Durant. Okay, he's not them. But what he can do better than anybody, I will say whoever lived, is catch and shoot.
Mm.
He doesn't have to put it on the ground.
Nope.
David, you've watched this guy for years and years and years. It is the fastest release. And what happens when he's on?
The net doesn't move. The net doesn't move. When he's on, I mean, he'll make 7 or 8 of those in a row. And it'll be, I mean... The guy could be defending him perfectly. He could do everything you're supposed to do, and it doesn't matter. If he sees the front of the rim and it's one of those nights, he's unbelievable.
He once had 37 points in a single quarter.
On like 9 shots.
Okay, now nobody else has done that. All these great players, they haven't done that.
Yeah.
37 in a quarter. Is he helped immeasurably by the fact that there's a 3-point shot and an 8-0-2?
Sure,
but he's great at it. He made his first 10 threes last night. He finished with 44, not the James Harden way, no foul shots.
Right.
He finished with 44. He shot a cool 17 of 20.
Yeah, he doesn't shoot a lot of free throws.
He doesn't drive it.
Doesn't drive.
The other day he had a few dunks and people were astonished because he doesn't usually drive it. He's the son of Michael Thompson, who at one point was the number one overall draft choice.
Right.
And has had a long and distinguished career. Not a great career, but a long and distinguished career. Topped off by the fact that he's been doing color for 20 years.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm speaking directly to Wilbon now, who's not listening. But that's why I'm glad David is here. Wilbon is of this notion.
Yes.
That the Golden State Warriors have come back to the pack. That nobody is afraid of them. That they can't go out and murder people anymore. And I've said to him, exactly what planet are you living on? They won two championships, or one anyway, before they got Kevin Durant. They won two more with Kevin Durant. They've won three out of four. And the only thing that stopped them from winning four in a row was Draymond Green acting like a dope and getting banned from game five or six.
Five.
And then they lost. They lost to Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. They added Kevin Durant. They just added Boogie Cousins. Mm-hmm. And you can say what you want about what a team-killing cancer he might be. But on that team, which is the most selfless team ever,
right.
certainly since the Celtics of 80 years ago, on that team, he's going to fit in.
Yeah.
Because he wants to win.
Wants to win a title.
He wants to win a title.
Sure. Why wouldn't you?
That's why he's there.
I will say this, and then David can refute it if he wants to. This is directly to Wilbon, who thinks that they're beatable. They're just somehow beatable by eight teams of the West. No, they're not. They could go the rest of the year and lose fewer than five games, and they could go through the playoffs 1-1-2. They could do that. They're that good.
Well, I'm going to cop out, Tony. You're going to hate this, but I think you're both right.
Okay.
I think you're both right. I think that teams are not as intimidated by Golden State as they were a few years ago. I do think that's true, but I don't think it matters. If they're playing at their best, they're still going to beat everybody.
If you max every team out, their separation is far greater than anybody else's.
Yes, and that, you know, assuming no injuries. I mean, the reason why...
Oh, sure. You got to be healthy.
Look, one of the reasons... Look, they almost... If Chris Paul doesn't get hurt, they probably would lose to Houston last year, but also, Andre Iguodala was hurt that whole series, so he didn't play. So, I mean, he's a big part of their team. So you have to take that into consideration as well. And, to your point, they now have something they never had before, which is a guy they can throw the ball to inside, and he can do damage inside. So when they're not, if somebody's really guarding Durant or Curry or Thompson well, they can just throw it in the Boogie, and he will make something happen. He is tough to guard. So
if they win this year, I said this a couple of days ago. If they win this year, that's four out of five.
Yeah.
You can talk about Michael Jordan and Magic Johnson. You talk about anybody you want. The last teams to win four out of five were the Celtics in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
This over 50 years ago.
Well, the Bulls won 6 and 8.
Yeah, but they didn't win 4 and 5.
They didn't win 4 and 5, no. But they would have. Obviously, if Jordan hadn't left, they would have. But they didn't, so... Yeah,
we're staring at what they did and what they didn't do.
Right.
Staying with the league, the opposite of Klay Thompson is James Harden. James Harden has scored over 30 points in 20 straight games or something like that. He had 37 last night, and they lost by 100.
Mm-hmm.
They lost by 100 points last night. James Harden is now, he's trapped. He's trapped by what is around him.
Yeah.
They have lost Chris Paul. We can debate how good Chris Paul is, but we can't debate that he's really good.
Mm-hmm.
And they've lost Clint Capella.
Yeah.
They don't have, there's no, as we like to say in the political world, there's no path to victory if James Harden scores 20.
Mm-hmm.
Right? He's got to score and score and score.
And, pass,
and they and they got killed. Now he, unlike Klay Thompson, James Harden frees himself up by throwing a right elbow into your throat, which is never called. It was never called. Kobe Bryant would take a jump shot and come down and put his elbow on your eye. It was never called.
Play on.
They're never going to call this thing on James Harden. And that's how he scores. Embiid is asked after the game. Look, Embiid hasn't won anything, and there's a part of me which says, hey, shut up, he wins something, but he's
funny.
But he's funny. They asked him about the game, and he says, it was fun. We beat him by 30. Yeah. They did. They did. Yep. And he had, what did he have, 30 and 10 for the 20th time.
Yeah.
Like, he's actually that good.
Yeah, he is that good.
He's that good. I don't know if he's fragile. I mean, he's not fragile this year.
Right.
He was fragile for a while. If he's not fragile, They are really good.
Harden will hurt them. Well, they can win in the regular season without Chris Paul. It's going to be hard for them to win the regular season without Capella. He changes everything about how they play, both ends of the floor, and what the things that they can do. And as good as Harden is, and he's spectacular, at some point you're running out of bodies. I mean, they're just running guys out there that just aren't that capable, you know. And so they were already kind of at a deficit by losing Ariza and Mbamute. They kind of fixed that defensively, but you know, their offense is all Harden now. It's
all there is,
like you said. And he can't just have 21. No. He's got to have 40 for them to win.
Yeah. Right.
Now,
it doesn't guarantee he's going to win. They just lost to an Eastern Conference team. Yeah. The Western Conference is much harder.
Yeah, and they'll still win a lot of games because he's that good. But I don't know. I think they will start. I think they're vulnerable to falling off the pace in the West without Capella for these 4-6.
So. That's the NBA. You'll notice I'm not talking about the Wizards. It doesn't really matter. But I wanted to mention
two games out of the playoffs.
They've won 7 out of 10. They are red hot.
They are without
the guy.
They're better. They're a better team. They're not. It's hard for me to say they're better, but they are.
They're not.
They're a better team.
Well, they're not a better team. There's a distinction.
They function higher up to their
potential.
They
move the ball more without him. Because they have to move the ball without.
Right.
The reason why they move the ball is because nobody can create a shot on their own.
That's right.
He can. That's the difference. All that stuff, he does that by himself.
So, but we could probably agree on this. Their results are better.
Their results have been better.
Yeah, well, yes. Right. Yes. They have been better so far.
Well, I will say this.
7-4, I think.
They're 7-3 the last 10. But everybody thinks that they were at... We went 30-10 without him last year. They were 16-16.
They were 500 without him. They're 500.
And they're going to be 500 without him this year.
Then they're not going to make the.
Well, they could. They're only two out, okay. So they could. It's the East.
The one other thing I wanted to talk about in the lead of the show was the number one team in men's college basketball.
About that.
And if you follow college basketball, you understand that the weakest major conference, top to bottom, for a million years has been the SEC.
Basketball.
Yeah, in basketball. There's been Kentucky at the top, and maybe Vanderbilt's been pretty good, but by and large...
Every once in a while, Georgia's okay.
Yeah, but they're not much. Yeah. Right. They're not much. They're the number one team in college. Now, I don't think they're the best team, but they're the number one team right now. The last time they were this good was over 50 years ago.
Hmm.
It was Bernard King and Ernie Grunfeld.
Ernie and Bernie show.
Yeah, that's when Ray Mears was the coach. It's a tremendously long time ago. And so I'm going to ask, Nigel, you are a relatively sophisticated college basketball fan, at least in the Big East and in Georgetown.
Sure.
Do you know the head coach at Tennessee?
I do, only because we talked about this the other day. It's Fred Beadle Barnes, isn't it?
It's Rick Barnes.
Rick Barnes. The other Barnes.
Rick Barnes, who...
But when you asked it before, I had no idea. Oh, yeah. I came up with Bruce Pearl, and that was it.
Rick Barnes was a very effective coach in the ACC, which is a great league, top to bottom. And then he went to Texas and was good.
Not good, but not great.
And then he left Texas, and now he's at Tennessee. The fans of the Tennessee Volunteer basketball team didn't want him. They said, you know, he's old. It's passed him by. His teams aren't exciting. You think they want him? Because I think they want him now. I think they want him now. I'm not saying that. I'm saying they're not the best team in the country. But to be ranked number one from that conference and not be named Kentucky is a really big deal. And Rick Barnes was he an assistant to Gary for a year at one point at Maryland? Is that possible?
I don't think so.
But he coached in the ACC. Well, he's from Virginia or North
Mason.
Carolina.
That's where
he coached at Mason.
My first year
and
on
then
the beat.
Did he coach at Wake? Did he coach at Clemson?
Clemson.
Coach at Clemson briefly. Mm-hmm. Then he went on.
And to Texas, I think, right?
So he's a really good veteran coach.
Yeah.
He had a guy we like to call Kevin Durant for the one year Kevin Durant was in college.
Sure did.
You know, what is it? Can you look up him? Where did he start?
Started at North State Academy as an assistant, then to Davidson, Mason, Alabama, Ohio State, 86-87.
As the head coach?
No, as an assistant.
Okay. Right.
Then Mason as the head coach, Providence. Clemson, Texas, and now Tennessee.
So he's been around the block.
Yeah.
I thought he was involved with Gary at one point, but apparently not.
No, he was not.
Was he born in North Carolina? He's born to the ACC.
Born in Hickory, North Carolina.
Yeah.
And he's good.
Rick's very good coach. Yeah, he's a very good coach, yes.
All right, so we will take a break, having exhausted all the basketball, with the exception of our lead news story, which is Carmelo Anthony.
we found him.
Drops from sight. And we will have Jason Lockenfora talk about the sport that people care about most when we return the NFL. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Bespoke Post ad. Every month I get sent a box of awesome from Bespoke Post. And I have to tell you, there are so many unique items that you'd never think to buy for yourself. Then it says, in your own words, describe the box of awesome items that you've received. Michael, can you describe the box of awesome items I have received?
One of the items you received, which you were kind enough to give to me in the spirit of selfishness for me, was the the cast iron Dutch oven, which is great this time of year.
Very
nice.
Use
that to make some small loaf breads in the oven.
I would say that's awesome.
This thing is sort of, I don't know that I would buy this for myself, but when it comes to my house, I'm very happy to have it. Mm-hmm. I think that I would describe it that way.
Yeah.
And you should visit boxofawesome.com and answer a few short questions that will help them determine the boxes that fit you best. Each box goes for under $50, but has more than $70 worth of unique gear waiting inside for you. The first of each month, you'll receive an email with the box details that they're going to send you. And if you're not feeling that box, simply skip it. From barrel aging kits to limited edition cigars to weekender bags to classy dop kits, Bespoke Post offers essential goods and guidance for the modern man. To receive 20% off your first subscription box, go to such a great title, boxofawesome.com and enter code Tony at checkout. That's boxofawesome.com, code Tony for 20% off your first box. Bespoke Post, theme boxes for guys who give a damn.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is sent to us by Daniel Krauf in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, who writes, I submit for your consideration my daughter Sydney's second single, Follow Me, on the occasion of her 18th birthday.
Oh.
While her golf career seems to be in a rearview mirror, her singing and acting career is hopefully off to a good start. She got a thrill when you played her first one. We hope you'll give this a spin as well.
I like this.
It's very lovely.
The singing's going to start soon, right?
I hope so. All you gotta do is follow me. It's an 18-year-old girl.
Wow.
It's not bad.
It's an 18-year-old girl.
It's better than I could do at 18.
Yeah. Better than I could do
a little bit.
At 18, 36, 54, and 72. A lot better. That is Sydney Crowell. Lovely.
Wow.
All right, Jason Lockenfora of CBS Sports joins us now. We always start with a copper update, so we will ask once again, how is the dog right now?
He is excellent. Thanks, Tone.
Good.
He's around pretty good. He's curled up next to me, three quarters asleep right now on this chilly morning. So, no complaints. Hope everybody else's feline friends are doing well.
Good. Okay, so let's start with the most obvious question probably in the history of playoff football, or certainly since the Tuck Rule. What does the NFL do about the non-call on textbook pass interference? Helmet-to-helmet hit and getting there too early and not turning around to play the ball. Other than that, it was a very legitimate play.
Yeah. Fundamentally sound, though, other than the four potential flags that could have been thrown.
Right.
What do they do? They do a lot of navel gazing. They do a lot of talking. They do a lot of caucusing, conference calls. They'll give Goodell a lot of talking points when he meets the media a few days before the Super Bowl down in Atlanta. And the competition committee will drill down and come up with a suggestion or two. And then ultimately, I'm not sure how much really changes. I don't think we'll get to the point that Bill Belichick's been championing for years now, which is just make everything reviewable. Let's just get it right. I don't know if they adopt the CFL proposal of, you know, you can maybe they create a separate flag for pass interference and you can only throw that X number of times. Maybe they make pass interference automatically reviewable, but don't expand beyond that. And maybe, you know, a person or two gets repositioned or loses their job or whatever out of this as well. They'll do something. I'd be lying if I told you I knew what right now. They don't know what right now. But I would just caution people in situations like this. You know, you're going to hear a lot of impassioned speech from players and coaches and GMs. Let's see how much we hear from owners, because they're the ones who decide everything. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And outside of Gail Benson's, you know, sort of scorched earth statement, yeah, I don't see any other owners coming out and saying, I agree, or, yeah, you know, we've got to do something about this. And generally, you know, they don't swing the pendulum too far. And it's the coaches can say whatever they want. The coaches didn't want the coaches didn't want a different overtime format. The coaches didn't want overtime shortened. They do that stuff when the coaches aren't around. So I'm not sure it's going to get to where people want it to go.
Okay, this is my problem, and I don't want to just beat Goodell over the head, but I'm going to end up beating Goodell over the head. The commissioner of a sports league, in a circumstance like this, has to get out in front of the camera quicker than 2 weeks down the road. Mm. He's got to say, look, we blew this. We thought about, you know, keeping people in the locker room. Whatever he has to say, he's got to get out there. If not, then he deserves to have the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune, you know, parked in his can. Because he's the commissioner of the league. Every single person in the world knows that call was bad and it cost the Saints the Super Bowl. There's no debating that. They know. How can he be hiding now, Jason?
No, I mean, I kept thinking of those Southwest commercials. You know, he's watching the game in Arrowhead in the box with Clark Hunt.
Yeah.
And they can create the phantom call on Tom Brady, and I kept thinking, want to get away? Ding, you know what I mean? Like, how bad do you think he wanted to parachute out of that luxury suite? You know, I just don't think that's who he is. I don't think that's what this league is. I think they tend to be much more reactive, and he works at the pleasure of the owners, and until he's had a chance to see exactly where sentiment is, you know, and how many people think this is a tipping point, I don't see him as the kind of leader who's going to come out and start setting the you know, charting the new course or setting the template for change himself by calling a bunch of media into his office on Monday morning and saying, we got this wrong. I agree with you. I think that would be probably a positive thing for this league. And I think certainly from a PR standpoint, would maybe quash some people's concerns or at least temper them. But I don't think that's where we are.
Feels like he's hiding.
Yeah.
Feels like he's hiding. He has the power to reschedule. I don't say that he will reschedule. But in this particular case, look at the Saints' last two exits. Look at these last two exits. They make the worst defensive play in the history of the league last year.
Yeah.
And now this time they're totally hosed. They're totally hosed. Mm-hmm. What do you do about that?
Boy, I know it's going to be long, 7 months there before they get back on the football field. I mean, we can look at that call, and it was terrible, and it was at the most critical juncture of the game, and it literally kept them from bleeding the clock, kicking the last-second field goal and going to the Super Bowl. But we can also look at their ineffectiveness in the red zone early in that game.
Yes.
We can look at their inability, I won't even say to run the football, but just to try to run the football, which is counter to everything that made them the best team in the NFL for a stretch of 8 or 9 weeks or whatever it was. I mean, yes, Drew Brees was getting all the MVP chatter, but he was throwing the ball about 30 times a game, and they were running the hell out of the football with two running backs,
who
and Taysom Hill, and
Kamara
and when
Ingram.
He was available. Mm-hmm. I think they had 17 combined carries for Kamara and Ingram. And, yeah, it was only 48 yards, so I get saying, well, if you're running into a brick wall, why keep doing it? Well, because with their style of play, it takes volume to eventually suffocate you with the run game. And that's how they impose their will on you. And I thought, especially with the 13-0 lead, they could have handled the clock better. They could have stuck to that ground game a little bit more. And I think eventually they would have broke something and maybe broke the will of the Rams as well. Boy, I mean, again, like the two straight years where they had a team on the ropes and let them off.
Yeah.
And Drew Brees is not obviously getting any younger. They've got one more run as basically presently constructed, and I suspect Sean Payton will be one of the first voices in the ear of Art Rooney about Antonio Brown. I know that we talk about that team and how good they are offensively, but they were badly trying to get Emmanuel Sanders or some other quality receiver at the trade deadline. You know, it's Michael Thomas and then, like, Kind of sort of a tight end, and then Ginn if he's healthy, but there isn't that secondary complementary person in the passing game, and I think they go all out to get a veteran receiver to try to win next year.
Let me go to the other game, the New England-Kansas City game, and everybody agrees that that call was bad in the Rams-Saints game.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Wilbon, of course, believes, and actually wrote this on Twitter, suspects there's an agenda to help the Patriots. And I'm thinking, Mike, the commissioner hates the Patriots. He's sitting in the other box. The owners hate the Patriots. More fans hate the Patriots, despite what Boogie Cousins says. More fans hate the Patriots than hate any other team in the United States of America.
Yes. Nobody hates the Warriors. That's complete
nonsense. Is there any support for Wilbon saying there's an agenda to get the Patriots into the Super Bowl?
No, I don't. I like a good conspiracy theory every now and again with a nice bottle of Chianti and some fava beans or whatever else. But I don't think so. I just think, unfortunately, there was horrific officiating that went all around. I mean, a play that nobody's talking about because Tom Brady did at the end what Tom Brady does. But that pick play 15 yards downfield that the Chiefs got away with.
Yeah. Yes.
I mean, that was as egregious as anything that happened entire day of football.
Wilbon just called that junk to me because it didn't fit into his construct.
It didn't work in the narrative.
No.
You know, I think there were officials out of position. I think that there were people assuming rather than knowing. I mean, how do you throw a flag from behind the play and basically say, well, that must have hit his face mask? Or surely that large human hand came down somewhere on Tom Brady's head or neck. I don't know how to explain it. Although I can also say it's not entirely shocking either, as the as we've watched this league the last few years. Is the answer more technology? Is the answer more cameras? Is the answer more Big Brother? Is the answer an on-site hub of instant replay analysts, like the way they have their central hub in New York? Do we need a smaller hub of three or four people right on site who, boom, can literally get on a walkie-talkie and say, you screwed it up, you didn't screw it up, huddle back up? I don't know, but clearly, surely, this is not good enough.
Wilbon says that that Brady is always given an unfair advantage. Do you have a sense that that's true?
I think he can embellish and get some calls that maybe other guys don't. I think there has been a process in this league of quarterbacks sort of earning their way to a status where maybe they are slightly more protected, whether that is a conscious effort or just the subconscious of certain officials in certain moments. I think that the larger, more strapping these guys who are built like oxes and look like nothing can, they're impervious to everything. I don't know that they get, excuse me, hopefully Nigel can edit that out. They don't, I've said for years, I don't know that Cam Newton and Ben Roethlisberger in his prime and some of these quarterbacks who look like nothing can bring them down and get the calls that Peyton Manning looked like late in his career when he kind of seemed feeble and like, oh, don't breathe on him.
Yeah.
I don't know that I would have trouble saying there's special circumstances for Brady. Sorry, edit number two. But I would also say that, he takes advantage of all these little things. I think the reason we talk about it so much is because when, D Ford is half a foot or half whatever the distance was offside, and when a team does have a chance to make an interception and they drop it, Brady tends to feast on that. And then we fixate on it because that's when he wins the game.
So when it goes to overtime, after what was the most exciting fourth quarter anybody has ever seen, 38 points in the fourth quarter.
Goes four lead changes in the fourth quarter alone.
Fantastic. Again, junk by some people. But not satisfying. But Brady goes right down the field, which is exactly how the game began.
Yeah.
Brady went right down the field. Is there any momentum for changing the overtime rule? I'm okay with this rule. My feeling is there's got to be some benefit if you actually win the coin flip.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can't be stopped, that's it. You're done.
That's football.
That's football. Yeah.
And it doesn't happen that much, actually.
No,
it really does not happen as much as people think.
Yeah, I like this rule. I thought the old rule was patently unfair. Now they incentivize a touchdown rather than just a long field goal.
Mm-hmm.
The strategy cuts both ways. I don't like the college idea of just artificially starting on the 35 or whatever. Although if they eventually do away with kickoffs entirely, then maybe I could be, you know, coerced into that, because it's like, well, what do we do? You know, what's the difference?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, Tona. I think they played for, what, 3+ hours into 4 hours. Eventually, it's kind of like soccer when eventually you go to penalty kicks, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, they've been out there all day. Each team's had a bunch of chances to make plays. In this case, it's overtime. It's sudden death one way or the other. Mm-hmm. Somebody's going to find a way to make a play that ends the game. And New England made 3 of them on 3rd and 10. I'm kind of okay with it.
Yeah, I am as well. The other thing I wanted to say was that, at least in the second half, you looked at Patrick Mahomes and you said to yourself, he's it.
Oh.
He's the goods. I mean, he's going to be the guy for 10 years, right? I mean, he's that good. He seems that good.
Yes. There's no denying that. There's no two ways around that. And you know, right now I think he's so wired for that splash play that maybe sometimes, and now I'm nitpicking a kid who threw 50 touchdowns at 23 years old, but I do think there's room for improvement in that. Sometimes he knows that that arm is so powerful, and he's got receivers like Tyreek Hill who can break away from anybody, that he ignores some stuff over the middle that will just sustain a drive and just wants to just launch it on 3rd and 2 or 3rd and 7 or whatever and go for 50 when all you need is, you know, 8 or 3. And as he matures mentally, and he's already incredibly cerebral, I think you have the potential to see some and with the league being where it is and the rules being where they are and having an Andy Reid with him, I think it has the potential to be historic. And
so do
I think that's part of the reason why, as devastating as that had to be for Andy Reid again, there's a big part of him that realizes, man, we're already way ahead of the curve with this kid. And I get one more offseason with him, and we fix that defense just a little bit, and I'm going to be back here.
All right. Plug your podcast for us, Jason.
Tone, this week we will drill down on the mystery that is the John Harbaugh contract extension. Does it exist? Why hasn't it been announced? When does a press release matter, and when is it just words on a page? We'll discuss some potential offseason moves for the Ravens and start getting everybody ready and primed for O's spring training as well. You can follow us on Twitter at BMO Show Pod. Oh, dog's awake, and he's already getting ready. He heard some magic words.
Yep.
You can check us out on iTunes. It's Be More Opinionated Podcast, and www.bmoshow.com. Okay.
It's good to hear him, but settle him down. Thank you, Jason.
I'm all fired up now. Okay.
Jason Larkin, four boys.
I think we can go back to maybe one accent next week.
There you go.
Maybe
next
the year thing or something. I don't know.
Jason Larkin, four, who's just a great pleasure to have him on every single week. We will take a break. We will come back with news. We can introduce Liz Clark to everybody. She's here now. And I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Tony Kornheiser Show.
Was I supposed to do the sponsorship for Jason?
No, it's just for Wilbon.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah.
Lowe's is my new go-to destination where I can explore the latest innovative Craftsman products, including their new V20 power tool battery platform. And to be fair and to be honest,
yes,
if I walked into a Lowe's and I was standing next to the V20 power tool battery platform and it didn't have a sign that said, "This is the V20 power tool battery platform," I would not know it. Craftsman's V20 cordless power tool lineup features a high-capacity lithium battery that's part of Craftsman's interchangeable battery system. So it works with all tools in their V20 lineup, giving you the runtime you need, which I beg for.
Right,
and the power you
time.
Deserve. I got runtime. I got shirts that say runtime. The one battery system works on multiple products, making the V20 lineup easy to use and versatile. V20 brushless power tools are all proudly made in the United States. They use global materials, but they're constructed in Charlotte, North Carolina, which Liz is familiar with.
Yes,
all have brushless motors delivering high efficiency, better runtime, more power, and greater durability for all your projects. And you can explore the entire Craftsman V20 lineup at your local Lowe's store or visit Lowe's.com/Tony. That's Lowe's.com/Tony. Lowe's is the new home of Craftsman.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This comes from Jim Lipson, who writes, "Greetings and salutations. Jim Lipson here, Lynbrook High School class of 72. That's the neighboring town to my high school, Hewlett High School, Go Owls, from the Wayback Machine, submitting some tracks for my buddy Jacob Acosta and his band, aptly named the Jacob Acosta Band, whom I get to play percussion and harmonicas with on occasion when he sees fit. You'll note from the email I'm forwarding, he does indeed give his permission for you to play these fine tunes, which are mostly from his recent release, Desert Sounds, which are all songs written about Arizona and the Sonoran Desert.
Okay.
The bioregion, our fine, albeit politically bizarre state, inhabits.
Mm-hmm.
This is very, very nice.
Pleasant. Glenn Campbell-ish?
Sort of, yeah.
Right?
This is the Jacob Acosta band.
Did I give the name of the song? Did you read it? I'm sorry.
What is the name of the song?
In the Canyon.
In the Canyon.
Yes.
Okay.
It's very lovely.
As opposed to
Out
in
of
the
Canyon.
Or something like that. Michael, if people like the Jacob Acosta Band want to submit their music for us to use for free, I must add that, how do they do it?
Email us your music by sending it to jingles@tonycornizershow.com.
Are we selling anything?
Today we are not. We are selling just this show.
Okay.
Hopes and dreams.
That's good. This is news. What have we got, Nigel?
Mr. Tony, we have big news. Mm-hmm. Our top headline, we have found Carmelo Anthony.
Woo!
Well, at least temporarily. He's been shipped off to Chicago, who I believe are saying, well, we're going to waive him in a matter of days or hours.
Yep.
So I guess the expected landing spot for him is maybe the Lakers?
Potentially, I suppose. Yeah.
So here's my comments on Carmelo Anthony. To trade him to Chicago, to get Chicago to take him, Houston had to give Chicago money.
$900,000.
They had to give him money. I don't care if it's a buck and a half. They said, will you please take him? And they said, no. What if we give you money? Will you please take him? Now, Wilbon, when we found this out last night, it was like right at the end of the show.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't put it into the show.
Right.
Because Mike said he'll never play for Chicago.
That
so at that point, you know, we're going to back away. I'm sure we will talk about it today. Carmelo Anthony was a big star.
Sure was.
A big star. And his stuff with the Knicks, which is, you know, it turned out very badly at the end. The stuff with Phil Jackson, everybody had to take a side with Carmelo Anthony. Carmelo Anthony won a national championship at Syracuse. He was a big star in the league. He never perhaps achieved with the teams that he was on the heights that maybe he should have. But he was an undeniable big star and a great player. This is a fall. I don't know. Without injury.
Yeah.
Because I would point to Isaiah Thomas
as a tremendous
fall. But without injury, I'm not sure I've ever seen a fall like this.
No, it's hard to put to compare it to anything in recent years anyway. I mean,
he's unwanted.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's the game has passed him by, Tony. I mean, it's just what he does, his skill set just does not translate in any appreciable way to the game that's being played now.
Because he's not a three-point shooter.
He's not a very good three-point shooter, and he's not a very good defender. He is a high-volume, low-post, mainly. If you give him enough touches, he'll get to the foul line so he can help you, but that's not how anybody plays anymore. So it just, it really is a case where the game...
He's the dinosaur in the tar pit with his foot.
Yeah.
He can't get out.
Yeah.
No, it, no. Yeah. It, there's no. What is the explanation? No,
it's just not the game anymore. I mean, it's just, and it's not his fault. I'm not asking him to be able to be great at what he does. But you know, you have to adapt or die. I mean, everybody laughs at Brook Lopez shooting threes, but he said, "Well, you got to shoot threes now in this league to survive." And so
it's less than 2 years ago.
Yeah,
that. Teams thought, like Oklahoma City, the addition of this particular
will
make us a championship team.
Yeah.
Now he can't get on the court.
No.
How old is he?
33, 34. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it's just a matter of
not
being, you just can't play through a guy that's that inefficient.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to do.
Unbelievable. To me, no one believes that what he does well has diminished to the point that he is unwanted in the league.
Yeah.
They just think, I don't need this guy. He hurts my team.
It's very similar to the way Iverson went out. And the unwillingness to accept a role coming off the bench. You know,
this was a debate for years in New York. What is Carmelo Anthony going to do? It was it's just unbelievable.
It's astonishing.
There's no spot.
Yeah.
Only on a bad team, basically.
Yeah.
And even a bad team, what do they want him for?
Yeah.
You know what he's being paid this year? $23 million Houston, plus the $900 they just had to send to get rid of him.
So he's sort of like,
I'll take him for $500,000. I'll take him.
You can stay at your house?
Yeah, I'll take him.
Put him in the little house.
Unbelievable. All right, let's get to Liz Clark. Because
Australian
Open tell us what you were doing early this morning.
Yes, well, I was up at 4:30 to watch Francis Tiafoe, you know, a local young man, play in the quarterfinals of a Grand Slam for the first time against, of all people, Rafael Nadal, who's won 17 majors, and Rafael Nadal, who is stunningly at 32, is still improving his game or adapting his game, and is rested, seemingly healthy, and he's just been merciless. So I was watching that, and it went by ever so swiftly.
Yeah.
It was a straight sets route. It didn't even take 2 hours for a best of five sets match. Mm-hmm. So it was stunning. I mean, and I was mainly watching because of Tiafoe, who is a person and a story who I have loved following these past couple years.
For people who are outside of the D.C. area, he is a local for us.
Yes.
He's from Hyattsville, Maryland. Yes. He learned to play at the University of Maryland Tennis Center, right?
It's out at College Park, not affiliated with the university.
His dad worked in there, and that's what he did.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yeah. His parents are immigrants from Sierra Leone. I mean, it's an incredible story, and he's now kind of a global figure, you know. He just turned 21. To reach the quarterfinals of his first major was just huge. And he knocked off three higher ranked players to get there. And so I was watching it for Francis, or, you know, to focus on his game. But I could not help but be awed yet again by Nadal.
Who you love.
Of course I love. But what is really striking me this morning is, you know, for many years, I think a lot of people were just awed by the physicality of Nadal, the musculature, the effort he plays.
Okay, so everybody was listening to Liz Clark talk about Rafael Nadal and his musculature and how she's enjoyed watching him play. And then the computer went down.
Yes.
And in the spirit of honesty here, we have fixed the computer and we lead Liz back into that particular comment.
Thank you. So the point I was tediously getting to is that what struck me today is how Nadal continues to evolve and the incredible efficiency of his game today. Tiafoe is actually physically bigger than Nadal, which is kind of stunning. He's 6'2", 190. Mm. But it was just incredible display of Nadal giving away nothing. There was no wasted motion, no careless points, nothing casual today. Not that that's ever been a part of his game, but his serve was super efficient. I want to say like 70% first serves in. He's only lost two service games in 54 coming in, and a lot more today. He gives away nothing emotionally. I mean, there's no eye roll or disgust or self-loathing, and that's kind of a young player's thing. And we saw some of that with Francis, you know, audibly like, "Oh, Francis, you know." So he wants so badly to be great. There's a lot of wandering around and wasted energy that he'll get better control of. But and Nadal has developed a great range of shots, a great range of serves. I mean, body serves, high, you know, take you wide serves, impossible spins, slices, drop shots. It's just he's getting better as age takes certain things away. And I just love the way aging athletes accommodate. And we see that in Federer, and I'm sure David has great analogies.
You see it in
the NBA.
Yes. It's 41. Yeah,
that's an excellent point. So, again, I was watching for Francis, but I kept being, you know, kind of awed by Nadal.
So I could be wrong about this, but the last really contender for slams, an American male, I think is Andy Roddick.
Correct.
And that's 10 or 15 years ago now. Is Tiafoe that good?
Not at this moment, but I think the upside is even better than Roddick's. I mean,
really?
I have huge regard for Andy Roddick because he really maximized his talent and ability. But that itself was limited. You know, big serve, big forehand. Mm. Wasn't the greatest mover, not the greatest backhand. But he worked so, so hard. So huge admiration for me. But Francis has a tremendous upside. He's incredibly... He's a great athlete, for one. And not always great athletes are going into tennis in America. They're going into other sports. So he has that. He loves the game. He has a passion. He has a killer forehand. He has a great desire to get better, and he's only 20. He's like only 21 as of yesterday. I if he stays the course, mm-hmm. which I think he will, he really should be the brightest male star in American tennis quite soon.
Can I ask one other question?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
And this has to do with. I understand how seedings work. Mm. You can't ask the number one seeded woman in the world to play Serena Williams in the round of 16 because you've arbitrarily made Serena Williams 16 because of some sort of algorithm. I mean, she's the best player in the world, and you can't put Halep against her in the round. It's just ridiculous. Don't they know that?
Of course they know. I mean, there's no one has any lack of respect for Serena, but... You know, in her first year back from childbirth, a very difficult childbirth last season, she reached two slam finals, which was amazing. That said, she was probably playing at 70% of her peak ability. It's amazing what her less than best is, but you can't just seed her first. I mean, it's an impossible math equation to figure out how to seed a champion like Serena. She's a once in a millennial athlete. I really believe.
If I'm the number one seed and I look at my draw and before the first weekend I got her
before the quarters.
Yes.
It
is what it is. I don't know what else to say.
Okay. I wanted to get to... Do you have other news?
Well, I was just going to say at the Wizards game, which we did not talk about.
We did not talk about.
But
somebody was spotted there.
Yes.
Alex Smith.
Oh, we're not going to talk about the game.
Right.
But Alex Smith... Okay, because we're not.
Nah.
Okay. But Alex Smith showed up on the coldest day of our lives wearing a pair of cut-off shorts.
Yeah.
And on his leg... A cast that you described as...
It's the brace that Frankenstein would wear. Yeah. If Frankenstein broke his leg.
Frankenstein's got a knee.
Really chilling.
And by the way, in his defense, I think he has to wear... Only one leg is shorts. The other is all the way down.
Sure.
I don't think he can fit the pants around the device.
When you saw that...
Well, the first thing I said is, why are you at a Wizards Pistons game?
Right.
Yeah. Ooh, makes zero sense. The Warriors are coming here Thursday. Why don't you come to that game? What's the matter with you? I mean, I know he likes basketball, but geez, I didn't even want to be at that game. it was mad.
It broke my heart to see that
image. If you do that, let's be adults for a second on this. When you pick and choose that time, you know who you are, and you know that's going to cause a stir.
Sure.
There is no question that you know that's going to cause a stir. You are walking around with a brace that is enormous, and this is months after your leg was broken.
Yeah.
And the only thing that anyone is going to say to you is, well, are you going to play again?
No,
look at that. Are you going to play again? I mean... He's not stupid.
Yeah.
He knows he's going into public.
Smart guy. Yep, in public. Yeah, got introduced. Yeah, everybody saw it, so it wasn't.
What do you think?
That
looks bad.
I mean, it doesn't, Tony. I mean, look, I don't think anybody had any expectation that he was going to be ready for anything having to do with prepping for the season, much less the start of the season. I mean, I have heard nobody say, well, he'll be back. And, you know, nobody thinks he's going to be back, you know, in time for the start of next season. I have not heard anybody say credibly he will play next season. They have only said that he's going to be out a certain number of months, but nobody has said after that certain number of months that he jumps right back in. I mean,
apparently, it was a projected 6 to 8 month recovery time before the infection. So you don't know how much that's delayed it.
Yeah, so
that looks like I'm never playing football again. Now, I am a doctor. Well, I'm not that kind of doctor.
You are a doctor.
So let's say that's true. What then is the value of showing up to a Wizards game and being that public and out front of it?
He looks
peaceful. He looks like he's at rest.
Yes. Yeah. I mean,
I think he's accepted whatever it is.
But he did not comment. I mean, you can't. This is the thing I will say. If you're Alex Smith, you know what your arrival there is going to mean. And I'm sorry, I think you got to say something.
Well, I don't think so, Tom. Why do you think he has to say something? I mean, I would love him. I'm a journalist. I would love
for him. Everybody's going to say,
sure,
what's going on?
Well, maybe he's not ready to have that conversation, and maybe he doesn't know what's going on. I mean, there's no... Again, I don't know.
But it's a stunner when you see it.
Sure.
I did not cover him, so I don't have any insight into his personal thinking or what's the strategy behind that, if there is a strategy, or if he just was invited by somebody to go to that game and he thought that would be a great idea. I mean, I can't peel back any layer there, but when based on what I understand about the injury, the infection, his career to date, his age, and then seeing the level of stability and brace and that is required just for him to get around right now. To me, the question is, do you want to continue in the NFL? Mm-hmm. I mean, if he were a family member of mine, let's just leave the Redskins out of it, any specific timetable. It's just like at 35, am I right?
34,
is he
35?
You know, at 34, 35, do you feel you've accomplished what you wanted to accomplish? Mm-hmm. And, you know, do you want to focus on walking, you know, normally and having a great quality of life? Yeah. I mean, that's, to me, the only discussion he ought to be having.
Go back to the video and look at the crutches in the background. It looks like the tools of death.
It's enormous crutches. It just ginormous crutches.
I wish him the absolute
Okay.
Absolutely.
Let me rephrase it. Alex Smith is smart enough to know he's making a particular statement by showing up with all that paraphernalia at that particular event.
Okay.
I thought it was incumbent upon him to say something, but he chose not to say anything at all. And now you look at it and you go, whoa, that's even worse.
Well, it's
worse.
It's what it is and what it's always been.
I never thought it was going to be an extremely
serious injury.
It's so easy.
That's like when a guy puts a halo on his head.
Yeah, it's one of those.
No, it's true. But it's so easy, I think, for all of us, even reporters who've kind of seen a ton in sports, to just think these athletes, you can fix them up. You can bandage them up. They're going to, you know, they're going to climb out of the car. They're going to do this. They're going to. But it takes a lot to shock me, but that image really shocked me.
Yeah, sure.
Mark Sanchez has issued a statement saying he will be ready for week one.
That's great. Yes. We will take a break. We will come back with Old Guy Radio. We are hoping that there will be the announcement today of the Oscar contenders. Yeah. If not, I've got enough to talk about because that's my job. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Darling, you. This is Sam Cooke, and this is Old Guy Radio for the day. As he's always introduced, the late great Sam Cooke. In terms of critical commentary, before we get to why we're doing this, he, an astonishing singer who covered a lot of songs like this, who had a lot of sort of white people songs, but then you find out that he sings a song like A Change Is Gonna Come, and you go, oh my God, why didn't you play this for me when I was 11 years old?
Right.
Because I don't know that there's a better voice than Sam Cooke's. Why are we playing that?
Because this would have been his 88th birthday today.
Okay.
Yeah. Died in very disturbing fashion.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, it's very dubious circumstances.
Yes, not good.
No, not good. But this was his first number one hit.
But not shot by his father, like Marvin Gaye.
No, not shot. Yeah, but shot in a motel and is really...
Seedy.
Yeah, just something...
Couldn't have been good.
Something was going on, and there's been different accounts of what was actually going on, but it was just it's a terrible tragedy.
Fantastic voice.
Oh, just
fantastic, great singer.
And this was really his first big song.
Yes, yes.
And it just overnight...
His first big song for general audience.
Yeah, for the general audience. The first one that went to number one. And the B side of this was Summertime, that they thought, this is going to be the A side. Mm-hmm. And the DJs got the record and like, no, we're going to play this. Mm-hmm. And basically overnight, this was just a massive hit.
And Pat Boone didn't even cover it.
No,
he couldn't get it out in time.
So euphemism, cover it.
All right, so we've got the Oscar nominations. So we're going to read the Oscar nominations, or I'm going to read them. We're going to talk about it. Lead actress. I am unfamiliar with the woman from Roma. I I guess her name is pronounced Yalitza Aparicio. Lady Gaga in A Star Is Born. That means she's one for one. It's her first movie. Right. Glenn Close in The Wife. I've got that at home. I've got a screener on that. Olivia Colman in The Favorite, which she's great.
She is.
It's just not a great movie. And Melissa McCarthy in Can You Ever Forgive Me? I've got a screener of that. That appears to be a movie about two drunks.
No, she was forging stuff.
Melissa McCarthy?
Yeah,
this is not her typical comedy.
No, it's based on a true story with somebody who was producing stuff.
Everything's based on a true story, except for the Avatar.
It's based on a novel by a man named Lear.
The Fish Lady movie.
Yeah, she got in trouble. No. Whoever was got in trouble for, but this is that story.
Okay, so I can
watch.
So
is that the complete list? Those are all the
five. That's the five.
Okay, five best.
This is five.
Okay,
and the only thing that just changed is there are more movies nominated. More
really dislike that
lead actor. Christian Bale in Vice, who he's unbelievable.
Yeah.
How he looks, he's unbelievable. Bradley Cooper in A Star Is Born. Willem Dafoe at Eternity's Gate. I have not heard of this movie.
No.
Viggo Mortensen in Green Book. And Green Book is a big hit movie.
Mm-hmm.
And Rami Malek in Bohemian Rhapsody. I've got that at home, too. I had no particular interest in it, but people tell me it's very good. I don't know. He plays Freddie Mercury.
Yeah.
Right? So that's two. So Bradley Cooper, Star Is Born and Bohemian Rhapsody are music-oriented, as is Green Book, right? Doesn't he play piano a lot in Green Book? Chris. Supporting actress, Amy Adams in Vice, Marina de Tavira in Roma, Regina King if Beale Street Could Talk, Emma Stone in The Favorite, and Rachel Weisz in The Favorite.
Mm.
Again, I would tell you, if you want to watch that movie, please let me know what it's about. If you make it all the way through and you like it, tell me why. Supporting actor, Mahershala Ali, who has won an Oscar 2 years ago in Green Book. So both people in that are nominated. Adam Driver in Black Klansman. Sam Elliott in A Star Is Born. Richard E. Grant, Can You Ever Forgive Me? Which sounds like it's a two-character thing with Melissa McCarthy. And Sam Rockwell in Vice. Sam Rockwell is not on the screen all that much. He plays George W. Bush. In an extraordinarily mean movie. It is. It's a really mean movie. It doesn't mean it's not wonderful. It's extraordinarily mean. Directing, Spike Lee.
Sure.
Black Klansman. Alfonso Cuarón in Roma. Pavel Pavlyukowski in Cold War. Utterly unfamiliar with it. Yorgos Lanthimos in The Favorite and Adam McKay in Vice. Boy, I don't know that there's a great, maybe Roma's a great movie.
So Bradley Cooper didn't get nominated.
No, he didn't get that. He got it as an actor.
Got it as an actor.
Best Picture, and there's more than five now. Black Panther, Black Klansman. I'm trying to look if there's anything else that starts with the word black. Black Ice, which I slipped on the other day. Bohemian Rhapsody, The Favorite. Green Book, Roma, A Star Is Born, and Vice. You watch a lot of movies. Is there a great one in there? Is there a great one? Black Panther a great movie? It's a cartoon movie, but everybody said it was great.
It's a great movie.
I've got that. I should watch
it. For me, and I really enjoyed it.
Did you watch it, Liz? David, did you watch it?
Oh, yeah.
I'm the only person in my house that hasn't watched it.
Black Klansman.
Black Panther.
I did not see that. I saw Black Klansman. Sorry.
I mean, it's good.
My mind was wandering.
It's not the best picture. I mean, it's a great superhero movie, but
it's a Marvel Comics movie.
To me,
it's really well done.
It's very well done. To me, the one that...
Like, I haven't watched any of the 90 of them that have come out in the past 10 years.
Right. To me, the one that stayed with me for days and days afterwards was A Star Is Born. That one I really, really enjoyed.
Roma is one you want to see very much.
I'm dying to see that.
It's available on Netflix. So yes.
This is not in English. It's subtitled.
It's black and white subtitles.
I just love everything I've read about it. In Europe, in Britain, The Favorite is just a huge sensation. I mean, it's winning all sorts of awards.
It's a very interesting look at cattiness and ambition.
Evil.
And power and evil.
Yeah.
It's very interesting, but after a while you go, okay, I got this.
I found it unsettling, but in the individual aspects of it, it's brilliant. I mean, all three female roles are amazing. The screenplay is
so witty and
edgy.
And you get to wear powdered wigs if you're a guy.
The costumes are beautiful. Everything, it's just... But on the whole,
there's
it's
too much
a lot
solitary
to say.
Piano keys to tell you that this is a very important scene that's
right.
coming up.
Yeah,
that's I mean, just it's precious.
And it has
I mean, come
some
on,
affected
it's
camera angles oh that I think kind of draw attention
oh
to the auteur.
Yes. Sure.
But it's a lot to absorb.
Great by the way, the Can You Ever Forgive Me is based on Lee Israel. Are you familiar with
no.
her?
No.
She was forging letters from deceased authors and actors and then selling them. She was like holding for money. So that
what
was
a,
the whole
what
thing.
What a growth industry that wow. could be.
Right, yeah.
Wow. So. Well, but they were not authenticated like a baseball.
No, they were
you
not.
You have to
no.
authenticate
yeah.
things.
Yeah.
When I was young and covered actual sports, and I would go to games and I would go, you know, 3-4 hours before so you get there and everything was set up. I remember going to a bunch of Philadelphia 76ers games when Gene Shue was the coach. And I remember watching all the ball boys sign all the names of all the players.
No. So then,
So they could sell these things.
Sure.
And the players would go, that's almost like mine.
Yeah,
that
looks close enough.
Yeah, sure. That happens everywhere.
Oh, sure.
That happens everywhere. So.
Oh, yeah.
What? They're not authenticated in the same way that this woman was not.
Wow.
So is that a good? Did you see the movie?
Yes, it was very good. She's
great. It was very good.
Yeah.
Really?
She's very good in it. I mean, it's because you
her
see
roles
her,
lately
I know, you
are
see
so
her,
obnoxious.
You see her and you think it's going to be this over the top slapstick thing, but no, she's got different gears. And she was in a movie called Saint Vincent with Bill Murray, where she sort of displayed some different levels to her.
Overrated movie. Watched
yeah, but it. I thought she Overrated. Was good in it because it wasn't what you normally expect from her. Mm-hmm. So.
No, usually she curses. From the moment she gets on the screen, and basically she's right in your face and wants to smack you in the head.
Yes.
And after a while, it gets to be okay.
Yeah, it's like a hackneyed TV character. I mean, the role she typically has, it's like, that's a sitcom.
And they have named a new host for the Oscars. It's Tonto Pronto.
Oh, is that what?
Yes.
I wanted to read this one thing. I'm not as familiar with the oeuvres of Cardi B and Tomi Lahren as I should be. I know that they're important. Well, I didn't know that Tomi Lahren was important because I never heard of her until I saw this today. But I thought I would read this in case anybody out there was under the age of 80. This is from the reliable source. Fox Nation host Lahren was unimpressed with Cardi B, the rapper's recent Instagram video in which she blamed President Trump's insistence on border wall funding for the shutdown. Quote, "Our country is in a hellhole right now," Cardi B told her nearly 40 million followers.
That is correct.
Our country is in a hellhole.
That would be great.
While fans started in with Cardi for president talk, Lahren was less complimentary, and she wrote, quote, "Looks like at I am Cardi B is the latest genius political mind to endorse the Democrats. Ha," unquote, she wrote Wednesday. Quote, "Keep it up, guys. Hashtag MAGA 2020. Cardi B responded succinctly on Sunday, and this is, I think, the tweet that we want to get to.
Mm-hmm.
"Leave me alone, I will dog walk you." That can't be good. That can't be good. Right. I will dog walk you.
Sure,
of course,
means.
Lahren wasn't that's about to let good. That one pass. Quote, "I'm sure you would," she wrote. Quote, "Still doesn't make your political rambling any less moronic. Hashtag build that wall."
Mm-hmm.
Cardi B, who like Lahren is no stranger to speaking her mind. Of course not. This is how people now communicate.
Mm-hmm.
Fired off one last tweet. Quote, "You're so blinded with racism that you don't even realize the decisions the president you root for is destroying the country you claim to love so much. You are a perfect example on no matter how educated or smart you think you are still a sheep. You're a sheep. And I will dog walk you."
Yeah.
Now, I don't know what that means, but I can't imagine it's good.
It's
not good. It can't be good. Can we say what it means on the air?
Yes, I've looked this up on
innocently?
Yes, I've looked this up on the interweb, and it says, "When you are beating someone and then you're dragging them around as if you were walking a dog."
Yes.
That's basically what
it is. I think Santino Corleone probably dog walked a lot of people.
Cardi B.
Outstanding.
What does she do? She has 40 million followers.
She's a rapper.
That's a lot.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
How many do you have?
I don't have any.
She went in. She had a very expletive
deleted type of video that you need to listen to. Yeah.
It was strong.
So Tomi Lahren, whoever she is punching way up.
Let's
put it that way. The desperate attempt to get as many followers as Cardi B.
Sure, sheep.
Has Pat Boone ever covered Cardi B?
That's enough. Yeah. I think that's enough show. I think we've done a really good show. All right, we will take a break and we will come back with a jingle and with some email. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
Here comes Tony's mailbag. Got your emails, faxes, and your notes. Here comes Tony's mailbag. Gonna read some for all of you folks.
That's Denise Graves.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
That's big time.
Yeah.
Let me thank Jason Lock-Kinfora of CBS Sports for coming on with us today. Let me thank today's sponsors, Lowe's and Bespoke Post. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of The Tony Kornheiser Show wherever you listen to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Play. If you listen to the show through iTunes, please leave us a review. Apparently, Steve Watson was in here with his daughter, Katie, who left me a nice little drawing.
There you go.
Steve Watson broke a couple of ribs as well. He had the same thing happen.
Ouch.
You slip on
the ice.
You break your bones.
Yeah.
Neil in Rockville, it's obvious the Wilbon assessment of the Patriots game is correct because it was clear that someone gave Romo the script before the game. Tony Romo's.
It was great.
Oh, my gosh.
Really?
She was great Sunday. Yes.
So good.
Yes. That was
so happy he's
one of the
Super
great
Bowl.
Calls ever of
yeah.
the game.
Yeah, and not just like a prescient. He was just so excited.
Yeah,
exactly. So much fun.
Exactly.
So I've thought about this, and it's not. I think because he was an undrafted free agent, I think probably his whole career, he had to study a little bit more. He had to work a little bit harder.
Sure. Yeah.
And he probably brings that to doing broadcasting.
Overachiever.
Because he's really good.
Yeah.
He's really good.
He really is.
Anthony in Pleasant Hill, by letting Fineman go, what's the cap hit for this year? And dead money for next year to sign new talent. Will this mean slapping the franchise tag on the leaf blower man is now on the table? Mm-hmm. I think you may be better off stretching out the Monkeys deal and trading Jeff Ma for two muralists and an Apple genius. That's good value right there. All love to you and Howard. And we extend the love as well. To Steve the Sycophant, I thoroughly enjoyed the discussion about possible reactions of primitive man to a lunar eclipse. My theory is as follows. Man, you see big circle in sky last night? Mate, I asleep. Man, sky monster swallow big circle, spit it out. Mate, you drinking fire water again? Man, not a drop. Mate, fine. But from now on, no more eating mammoth leftovers before you go to sleep. Man. I remember when you think something swallowed big fire in the sky. From Ryan Dovell, just to clarify Wilbon's position on the NFL. Wilbon, the call was a lie. A lie was perpetrated. So for me to just set that aside, I can't, I won't. Maybe everyone else can. I can't, I won't. Mr. Tony, so you will not watch the Super Bowl? Wilbon, I guess I'll watch it. Truly a man of principle. Patrick Stricker, Cincinnati, Ohio. The most recent player manager in the MLB was Pete Rose, who upon being traded for the Montreal Expos to the Cincinnati Reds in August 1984, was immediately named the Reds manager. Rose managed and served as backup infielder until the end of the 1986 season when he retired as a player. I believe the interwebs had that. I did not. I did not remember him as a player manager. I did not. Don Bailey, please bring back Howard Fineman. Would much rather hear his analysis on where we are now than multiple annoying appearances each week by Lace. The right and left in this country don't agree on much, like ever, but both agree that he's awful. Also, less bomb and gouge talk. Ugh. So he takes down Michael and Salissa in the same one. From John Chinney in Columbia, Missouri. Left sock, right sock, boxers, deodorant, t-shirt, pant, left leg, right leg, left shoe, shoe powder, right shoe, shoe powder, left shoe, tie, right shoe, tie, chef's coat, and no over-under problem here. Wet wipes, Grandpa. Wet wipes. That may be too much information.
Yeah, he also didn't give us the weight of his dog. I thought that was the new
Yeah, the new thing is, what does your dog weigh?
Yeah, what's your dog weigh?
What is your dog species, and what does your dog weigh?
Yeah, exactly.
John Holt, Richmond, Virginia. Did your text conversation with Howard start with where are we now?
No.
Daniel Cherry in Fayetteville, Arkansas. Is Wilbon kidding with his high horse on the NFL and their referees? Two words for you, Wilbon. Tim Donaghy. The entire culture of the NBA ignores missed calls and non-calls on fouls. It's an exhibition. No validity. Sad. Craig from Richmond.
A bit much, but
tonight, what is true about the NBA now is that, and Wilbon says this about the NFL with high dudgeon, they've legislated out defense. You
that
can't touch
correct.
Anybody.
That's correct.
That's why teams are scoring 140.
Exactly.
But if you say that to Mike, you'll die. Craig and Richard, tonight I stood in the kitchen and threw one of my kids' toys towards the general direction of where it goes in their playroom. The toy bounced off an end table into another toy and fell right into the exact basket with its fellow toy brothers and sisters. Delighted how well this worked out, I yelled, "What a shot!" I laughed and felt like I needed to tell you. From Kevin Fahey, the no call in New Orleans was the worst call in playoff history. Don't know what you're doing on December 28, 1975, but I brought my then future wife to her first NFL game. Mm-hmm. We were in the fifth row in the right field end zone of Old Metropolitan Stadium watching the Vikings beat up on the Cowboys. When right in front of our eyes, the officials missed Drew Pearson, committed the most egregious act of offensive pass interference in playoff history. Just minutes later, a peppermint schnapps bottle sailed from right behind us to land on the head of official Armand Terzian, who didn't see that coming any more than the previous play. And spare me the tears for the poor Saints in 2010 were allowed late hit after late hit after late hit on Vikings quarterback Brett Favre. That's true.
That is true.
As the Katrina fix was on display from the NFL. Not only did the refs allow that, but surely remember that Sean Payton and Greg Williams had established a bounty system of rewarding cheap shots that they knew would go unpunished during the game because the fix was in. Justice, baby, justice. That's a Vikings fan. If you're out on your bike turn, everyone, as always, do wear white.
Why do I want to puke?
Thank you, everyone.
Oh,
past the gardens by the river. You know I'll be cleansing my soul. Hush now, 'cause the creatures all around here are observing. Let's not disturb them. Just be thankful that now we can finally breathe. So there's beauty for us all, where we are safe from every phone call and plague and distraction. Oh, and look up for Mr. Harris and Mrs. Harris and Brother Harris. We can take turns like them circling round to no end till we finally collapse and we feel. Joseph Ives don't know a thing. $35 million need the river and their children and their children. For the wildlife and the weather, let's all go now, breathe it together. After 8,000 years, can we come back here? New story.